The U.S. charges Huawei with racketeering and stealing trade secrets.
So the new charges build on an existing indictment of Huawei that the Justice Department handed down earlier last year.
And estimating the potential spread of the new coronavirus.
To figure out how a virus will spread, epidemiologists calculate a number called the basic reproduction number.
Plus, Attorney General William Barr takes a swipe at President Trump's tweets. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we dig into the new U.S. charges against Huawei and the company's response, here's what you missed. Attorney General William Barr speaks out in an interview with ABC News. Earlier this week, Barr overruled federal prosecutors who wanted a harsher sentence for Roger Stone. Barr had been criticized for seeming to bow to President Trump, who had tweeted his displeasure with the Justice Department's initial sentencing guidelines. But Barr said his decision came before the president tweeted.
To have public statements and tweets made about the department, our people in the department, our men and women here, about cases pending in the department, and about judges before whom we have cases, make it impossible for me to do my job and to assure the courts and the prosecutors in the department that we're doing our work with integrity.
Stone was convicted in November of lying to Congress and witness tampering during the Mueller investigation. Has the coronavirus outbreak peaked? After Chinese authorities expanded the diagnostic criteria yesterday, leading to a higher number of officially reported cases, there are new concerns about how we'll know when the outbreak is at its high point. A key factor in determining this will be something called the basic reproduction number. It's written as R0 and pronounced R0. Essentially, it's an estimate of how many healthy people one contagious person will infect. Our numbers columnist Joe Craven McGinty has more.
The R0 number for the coronavirus is anywhere from 1.5 to 3.5, or a central estimate of 2.6. And what that means is that any person who becomes infected is likely to infect between 1.5 to 3.5 other individuals, or an average of 2.6. It's not unlike seasonal flu, which has an R0 of 2 or 3. But in the case of seasonal flu, of course, we have vaccines. So it's not so much the R0 in this case. But what is coming into play here is the fact that we haven't encountered this virus previously.
Joe says right now, surveillance in China is probably only picking up anywhere from 10 to 25% of infections.
So to control the virus, they need to get the transmissions down to one person who's infected, giving the virus to no more than one other person, and hopefully not even one other person. But to get to that point, if the virus is spreading as they suspect, they estimate that more than 60% of transmissions need to be blocked to control the virus.
You can find our coronavirus tracker, as well as our continuing coverage of the outbreak, up on our website. Now, our main story, Huawei. The Chinese telecom giant and two of its U.S. subsidiaries have been charged with racketeering and conspiracy to steal trade secrets. It's yet another front in the Trump administration's ongoing battle with Huawei over security concerns and the future of next-generation cell phone network technology. Tech reporter Dan Strump has been following all the twists and turns in this case from Hong Kong. So, Dan, tell me about the latest charges.
So the new charges build on an existing indictment of Huawei that the Justice Department handed down earlier last year. The new charges expand quite a bit on that indictment, which was solely around allegations that the company evaded sanctions on Iran. This indictment adds a number of new charges related to IP theft, alleging that Huawei stole technology over the course of about 20 years from six different American companies. And the indictment also adds charges related to alleged evasion of sanctions on North Korea. So it builds on the sanctions case that's already out there and expands quite a lot on intellectual property theft.
Do we know the names of the six U.S. companies?
So the six companies aren't actually named in the indictment. The Justice Department sort of uses coded language to describe them, basically calling them company number one, company number two, and so on. But reading between the lines and kind of based around the reporting that I and a number of other colleagues at the Journal have done, you can figure out for quite a few of the companies who they are. For example, one of the companies is almost undoubtedly Cisco, which sued Huawei back in 2003 around alleging that Huawei had stolen technology behind Cisco's routers. Another one of the companies is almost certainly a Silicon Valley chip company called CNX, and CNX just won in a separate lawsuit that was just resolved last year, alleging that Huawei stole some technology from that company. Another company is almost certainly Motorola, but two of the companies, there's some questions around. So we have an idea for who some of the companies are, but not all of them.
And what has Huawei's response to all of this been?
Well, Huawei's case, and Huawei, I should point out, fights aggressively pretty much every single one of these IP cases over the years. Huawei's response is that the charges are, you know, in the neighborhood of up to 20 years old, and that this is just the sort of latest in the Justice Department's campaign to take down what Huawei sees as competition in the U.S. rather than seeing it as a law enforcement matter. So, and another point that Huawei makes, which is correct, is that actually most of the new IP theft allegations that are made against Huawei in this indictment actually stem from much earlier civil suits that, for the most part, are resolved. Not all of these cases stem from civil suits, but of course the Cisco example does stem from a civil suit. There was litigation between Motorola and Huawei many years ago, and of course CNX as well was just recently resolved in a civil suit. Now the Justice Department is taking some of those civil suits and apparently trying to build a criminal case using some of the allegations in those suits.
I mean, this all comes at a time when the U.S. is trying to pressure its allies into not using Huawei's technology. How does this case fit into this larger battle over the future of 5G?
Yeah, I mean, these criminal cases against Huawei are one of a number of kind of outstanding actions or kind of campaigns that the U.S. is carrying out against Huawei. I mean, there's no doubt that Huawei is a major company, if not the dominant company in forthcoming 5G technology. The U.S. does not have a company of its own in its own borders with the kind of, you know, clout and size scale that Huawei does in telecom and in 5G specifically. So, I mean, now if you read the indictments, 5G technology is totally separate. I mean, these are purely criminal matters that the Justice Department sees as violations of law. But of course, it's hard to sort of separate the fact that the Justice Department and the Trump administration as a whole is paying so much attention to Huawei at a time when Huawei has never been more dominant and is eclipsing all of its competitors in the telecom industry.
You can find all of our coverage of Huawei up on WSJ.com. On to markets. We're going to once more look at the impact the coronavirus outbreak is having on markets, or in this case, the impact that it's not having. The outbreak has disrupted the world's second largest economy, but U.S. stocks have held close to records. Markets reporter Anna Isaac has more.
I think one of the key things here is that Chinese officials have made it clear that they'll do kind of whatever it takes to try and keep markets calm, to try and keep that money and fiscal stimulus going. So when they announced that they were going to put 1.7 trillion yuan into the economy to keep liquidity high, that was a real boost to markets worldwide. It showed people that they were really serious about trying to counteract these effects. You also have this issue of how exposed are US stocks actually. That's quite hard to quantify, but most economists think that the impact on at least the S&P 500 will be relatively muted. There are ways to reroute supply chains. There are ways around that. It doesn't mean it's not very serious. It just means that as it stands, it's not quite as drastic as people first thought when we saw the original market sell-offs.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. closing arguments in the Harvey Weinstein trial. Weinstein has been charged with rape and other sexual crimes. Yesterday, his defense team argued for acquittal, saying his actions might not have been respectable, but they were always consensual. Today, prosecutors wrap up their case. The jury is expected to begin deliberations on Tuesday. We'll also get retail sales for the last month. This is a key sign of the health of the U.S. economy. That's because consumption, all of our spending on everything from clothes to cars, makes up two-thirds of U.S. economic activity. Finally, we here at What's News don't like to pick favorites, so you're all our Valentines today. Congratulations. But because we're the Wall Street Journal, well, we can't avoid the temptation to dig into the economics behind the day. This year, we focused on the cost of a dinner. And bad news if you've booked someplace special tonight. The price of dining out is moving ever higher. Restaurant prices climbed 3.1% in January from a year earlier. That matches the fastest annual increase since 2009. Just one more quick programming note before we go. We'll be off on Monday for President's Day. That's What's News from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.